All right. Hello, everyone. And very happy Tuesday. So as you know, we're here for Gentle Healing Year 3. And as you know, because it's what I always do, I've collected things to share this week. But what I would like to do is find out if you all have anything you want to share first. So is there anyone who has anything they would like to share? It doesn't look like it, so I will hop in then with my sharing. So I had a starting with quote 606. Quote 606 says, "The person is merely the result of a misunderstanding. In reality, there is no such thing. Feelings, thoughts, and actions race before the watcher in endless succession, leaving traces in the brain and creating an illusion of continuity. A reflection of the watcher in the mind creates the sense of I, and the person acquires an apparently independent existence. In reality, there is no person, only the watcher identifying himself with the I and the mind." I'm going to read that one more time. "The person is merely the result of a misunderstanding. In reality, there is no such thing. Feelings, thoughts, and actions race before the watcher in endless succession, leaving traces in the brain and creating an illusion of continuity. A reflection of the watcher in the mind creates the sense of I, and the person acquires an apparently independent existence. In reality, there is no person, only the watcher identifying himself with the I and the mind." So I guess first, I'd like to see if, whoa, my book just fell on the floor. Which means I might have to put my computer down in a minute and go get it. But it sounds like I'm at times scraping the microphone. Maybe I was. Maybe it's the wind. Do you still hear it, Don? You do? Let me put my computer down. And I'll get my book while I have the chance. It may have been the wind coming in through the open window. So let's see if this improves it, okay? So does anybody have anything to share about that quote? Quote 606. All right, George, go ahead.
Okay. Let's see. I pulled mine up. Let's see. "I do identify myself as the I and the mind of I. I seem to be feeling, thinking, doing, and making decisions in response to current happenings. I can accept that thinking is not required. I see that awareness is required, but it's harder to accept that the body and awareness are not a unit. I have awareness in every moment, but when the body dies, I don't know that that awareness continues. However, the sages assure me that I am not this body and awareness is eternal. And if I continue to contemplate their words, accept their guidance, I will reach that knowing, that transition to the state of releasing belief in the mind and the body." So that was my contemplation. contemplation on that.
Thank you, George. Yeah, and as you read your contemplation, I remembered it. Brought it back to my mind.
I'm fine. Stop.
Oops. I'm fine. And I think maybe we can hear the people at the retreat house. Okay, good. I think you guys are muted now. Perfect. So again, we're looking at quote 606. And since we've had some people join us, let me go ahead and read that quote one more time. The person is merely the result of a misunderstanding. In reality, there is no such thing. Feelings, thoughts, and actions race before the watcher in endless succession, leaving traces in the brain and creating an illusion of continuity. A reflection of the watcher in the mind creates the sense of I, and the person acquires, spontaneously decides it wants to upgrade your software and turn off your computer. That was going on. Well, no, not right now. Okay. A reflection of the watcher in the mind creates the sense of I, and the person acquires an apparently independent existence. In reality, there is no person, only the watcher identifying himself with the I and the mind. Now, does anybody else have anything they want to share on that particular quote? Well, I'll tell you what I have in my notes, and I don't even remember why, so we'll go find out together. I have in my notes to look at ACIM lesson 168. And I think what I'm going to do is look at the tip for 168. Yeah, so this is the tip for 168. 168 is your grace is given me, I claim it now. Steve Ford, and we're going to maybe look at this video in a little bit. Steve Ford described his awakening experience to Rick Archer in a Buddha at the gas pump interview in this way. I stood before God, omnipresent reality, with the true intention. I handed over my thinking in a prayer position. And there was a point where as I let go, there was a slight sense of sadness, a slight sense of disappointment that I had with myself having to give the Creator my thinking back because it felt like I'd done nothing with it. I felt very sad. I felt, I'm sorry, but take the thinking back because I've not done much good with this. I felt I disappointed God. At that point, the mind began to open. It was a point where I'd let go of the tension of identification. Now, I didn't know that at the time, but what I did was I totally didn't identify with the mind because I knew mind was not real. And at the point of knowing it is not real, it was still the scariest thing to let go of. So letting go of that, I felt where I disidentified with it, where I let go of attachment to it as a reality principle, it started to open. Because the mind, when you are attached with it, becomes contracted. It's like an energy, a tight contraction. And of course, when I was no longer attached with it, it just began to open up. As it opened up, it went beyond the coordinate that I'd set on it, which is the egoic mark, the control you have on the mind, the idea you have. And so as it began to open, it went beyond the idea of who I was as a mental construct. And so beyond the mental construct of who I thought I was, there was a fear of, oh, what's going to happen here? But I was so broken, so completely broken. And there's a note from Regina that says, this happened at a point when Steve was feeling complete desperation and failure in his life. But I was so broken, so completely broken, that I just stayed with it. I thought, let's just do it. It dissipated. I describe it as birds flying out of a tree. It felt like my thoughts just dissipated. All of my thoughts in my mind just flew away like a flock of birds. And just at that point, there was this opening. The thoughts went, and the mind just became this blank screen. And there was this perfect observation of blank screen. I remember for the first time in my life coming to know peace of mind. You know when they say the mind is the sky and the thoughts are like clouds? It really is. That is exactly how it was. Suddenly there was this infinite sky of mind, which became, it's like a projection screen. But what is observing that is pure awareness, this pure consciousness. And at that point, I realized, ah, I'm not mad. I'm not dead. I've not disappeared. I am observing this. And I'm observing from this undifferentiated awareness. And the mind became the perfect reflection of what was observing, which was nothing. Emptiness, you see. And I'm going to stop there for right now, stop my share. I think we'll probably come back to that and finish it. But let me bring us back to quote 606. 606 says, the person is merely the result of a misunderstanding. In reality, there is no such thing. Feelings, thoughts, and actions race before the watcher in endless succession. Now remember, he used the same example that many people use when they awaken. He said the mind became blank, like a blank projection screen or like a blank movie screen. But what was on that blank movie screen prior to the awakening was feelings, thoughts, and actions racing before the watcher in endless succession. The movie, right? On the movie screen. In reality, there is no such thing as the person. Feelings, thoughts, and actions race before the watcher in endless succession, leaving traces in the brain, we would call those memories, leaving traces in the brain and creating an illusion of continuity. A reflection of the watcher in the mind creates the sense of I. And if you guys have been listening to the Bernadette Roberts teaching, you know how she talks about the mind bending on itself so that the mind can see itself. Well, this sense of the mind of an I being aware of thought, of an I being aware of feelings, of an I being aware of memories, but being completely caught up in the thoughts, the feelings, and the memories, that creates the sense of a person, right? That creates the sense of a person. A reflection of the watcher in the mind creates the sense of I, and the person acquires an apparently independent existence. But listen to this last sentence. In reality, there is no person, only the watcher identifying himself with I and mine. So the watcher is watching the feelings, thoughts, and actions race by on the movie screen. The movie screen is the mind, We could say race through the mind. Some of you might identify with through better, right? And we can even say through the mind and the body because the feelings are felt in the body. But then the watcher, not realizing that it's just watching this, identifies with what it's watching. And that's where the sense of me as a person comes from. And what's interesting, and I'll go back and we'll look at Steve Ford's awakening experience again. But what's interesting is Steve Ford is saying when he awakened, right, the thoughts, everything just kind of flew away like a flock of birds. And he was just left with the blank projection screen. But when he was just left with the blank projection screen, he suddenly became aware he was the watcher. You know, imagine you're sitting in a movie theater and you're all caught up in the movie, right? All caught up in the movie. You're not thinking about yourself at all. You're thinking about the characters on the screen. And then the movie suddenly just stops. You're then going to have an awareness of yourself again, right? So it's really the same kind of thing. When the thoughts flew away like a flock of birds and there was suddenly just a blank mind, he became aware of the self, of the watcher. But the watcher was there the whole time. There never has been a person. There's a watcher watching, we'll call it a movie. The movie of the person. Let me just check my notes of what I collected here before we go any further. Let's see. Yeah, I want to look at 607 and maybe 607A in Regina's journal. And then it says, watch 15 minutes of the Steve Ford video. So let's look at 607 before we go watch that video. 607 says, the sense of identity will remain, but no longer identification with a particular body. Being, awareness, love, will shine in full splendor. Liberation is never of the person. It is always from the person. Again, the sense of identity will remain, but no longer identification with a particular body. Being, awareness, love will shine in full splendor. Liberation is never of the person. It is always from the person. All right, let me share my screen again. No, I don't want to leave this page. I want to open a new page. And we're on 607. Once I get to my internet's a little slow because I don't have internet yet in the new house. I'm on my hotspot. So pardon the internet. Did I lose that? No. Pardon the internet speed. Step 3, 607, 607A. This says, beingness does not end in awakening. Only being something in a particular time and place ends. Being limited ends. Being specific and temporary ends. Being itself is known. Known free of the limits of being something specific. Okay, so I see why I wanted to go back to what Steve said again. He talked about, as his awakening was occurring, at that point he realized, I'm not mad. I'm not dead. I've not disappeared. I'm observing this. You see? So this is why the sense of identity remains, because the true I remains. I'm not the thoughts, they're gone. I'm not the feelings, they're gone. I'm not the story, it's gone. But I still am, right? I'm not mad, I'm not dead, I've not disappeared. I am observing this. And I'm observing from this undifferentiated awareness. And the mind became the perfect reflection of what was observing, which was nothing. Emptiness, you see. He says, this happened. There was no thinking. I'm going to go ahead and finish reading this to you, and then we'll watch 15 minutes of the video. At that point, I remember suddenly being pulled into a deeper idea, which was an emotional idea, because we have layers of thought. We have the thought that is very abstract, the thought that is emotional, and we have the thought that is very physical, the body. I didn't know this then, but this is what happened. So suddenly there was a pull to a deeper aspect of contraction within my body. You see, the mind opened up, so suddenly there was nothing to keep me from entering what I call the heart area. Suddenly there was a pull, and I felt myself as formless consciousness coming down into my heart area. And I was going down. I just stayed with formless consciousness. There was no egoic I anymore, no mental construct of doership anymore, and I was going into the heart. Suddenly the heart begins to open because I wasn't doing anything with it. There's a comment from Regina, there was no longer a doer trying to keep the heart from opening. And as it begins to open, there was a pain, but it was a clean pain. A pain where there was no suffering, because suffering is in the mind, you see. As I felt this pain, it was like the pain of the world. This voice came from nowhere. It was like a voice from within, this. It said, "You've been running away from this all your life." And I understood then, I'd been running away from my heart opening. I had remained in what I knew all my life. Suddenly, I'm going beyond what I knew. I'd done that with the mind, but now on this level, the emotional level, this was a much deeper level. The emotional attachment we have for things is much deeper and is much stronger, you see. And then it opened up, and all there was a void. Going beyond the emotional contraction of my identity, there was just this void. It was absolutely black. I don't want to appear too dramatic. I don't want to frighten anyone. But for me, I then was facing this very dark void. And then this void was pulling me in. As I was being pulled into this vortex, this void, there was another voice came in. It said, "You'll either go mad or you'll die." And I consented. I said, "Okay," not verbally, but in my innermost. Intentionally, I said, "Okay." And as I was pulled into this vortex, this very dark vortex, and as I got pulled in, it just felt like the whole thing opened up. And as I got pulled in, there was a point where I truly did not exist for no time. It was like, as soon as I got pulled in, I could then see from. And at that point, there was a point of absolute death, complete death of attachments. There was no attachment anymore to the mental structure or the emotional structure, so much so that everything had opened up and it truly reflected what was directly observing. And the void, in fact, was a reflection of the absolute. I could see basically. And I could see from a completely, completely different reality base to what I was before, totally. So what we're going to do at this point is we're going to go down and we're going to watch this video. Let me stop sharing so I can share again differently. We're only going to watch 15 minutes of it. You'll hear some of what I already said, and you'll hear some stuff that I didn't say. So some of it will be review, some of it will be new. AT&T is warning me I got to stop or I'm going to get charged, but obviously I can't stop with my data because, like I said, we don't have internet. see if I can size this. Am I allowed to size this? Yeah. All right, here we go.
Great in ourselves, or whatever. Yeah. And I had the most profound realization that I hadn't done that. Mm-hmm. What I'd actually done is I dived into the 12 steps very keenly, and I'd come to understand all the principles, I'd come to apply them, but I'd applied them from a mental basis in relation to a prescribed program, you see.
Yeah.
Now, between these two places, there was no Steve, you see. Now, I can say this looking back, because I've had to reverse engineer all of this and to understand, because the awakening changed everything completely. Once it happened, I thought, what just happened? Even though, I'll get to that in a minute. But anyway, so I realized, I thought, oh, right, I've not handed over my will. And of course, Sheila Jervis, the tutor, the wonderful sociology teacher, came into my mind again, and I thought, of course, I'm not my thoughts and my feelings, and I've not handed over my will in my life. I've not let go of the perceptual field of reality. I'm still hanging on to it, managing it, trying to create a better perceptual field or whatever, and a better Steve. And I just absolutely realized in that moment that I've got to let go of it. I've got to let go of this. It was the only thing left to do. I tried everything. 3.5 years, I've been working this program, working the inside of it and the outside of it, and applying it and understanding everything, you know. And suddenly I just found myself in the middle of the floor, on my knees, as if in front of God, you know. And I knew that I had to hand over the mind and my feelings. And I had no idea what would happen, you see. I hadn't been doing meditations to transcend the mind or to have the perfect emotional insight to things or whatever, you know. I had no idea of how to transcend or anything, or what would happen. I really had no idea. So I found myself just in the moment thinking, okay, because of the fear of going to drink again or what have you, it really was, okay, here I am. I will just give all of this to you now, all of this to you now. So on my knees on the floor, I consented to let go of my thinking. Now, this is something you can't just go and do. This is something, again, to do with timing, to do with pressure, to do with, in that moment, what was going on inside of me, what was going on. I mean, I was falling apart. There was absolutely no sense of authenticity. I knew that if something didn't was going to work, I was going to drink again. For me, I just thought, then, okay, I'll let go of my thinking. And for some strange reason, it worked. I have no idea why it worked. I could tell you now, Rick, or tell someone else, go get on your knees now and hand over your thinking. It will just go away and then you'll be fine. You know, it doesn't work that way, does it? Because then the ego comes and says, right, I'm going to get it now.
Yeah. What direction were you facing? What had you had for breakfast?
Exactly.
That's when I said in the beginning that I thought yours was one of the more remarkable awakening stories I'd heard. That's kind of what I was referring to there, is that, you know, there's this perfect sort of confluence of everything you had been through and your sense of desperation at that point, and, you know, the kind of realization that you had to surrender your volition to some greater power, and it all just came together and it actually happened, you know.
Yeah, it did. And the bed of that happening was my utter powerlessness and helplessness. I, from the age of 18, I realized that my life had been a lie. In my endeavor to create a recovery, that didn't deal with that lie. You know, I still remained dishonest, not knowing who I was in terms of identity. And now, at the age of 31, all these years after being 18, it just felt, I cannot do this anymore. This is it. I'm on my knees. I said, okay. So I put my hands naturally came down. I don't know if that's an important detail. My hands came down. I stood there with nothing. And I prayed to God because I was a Christian. I'm not a Christian as in identity, but at that time, the understanding I had of spirituality came through Christianity. Mm-hmm. And so I stood before God, which to me was never a guy with a gray beard or a big stick on a cloud. God to me was always an omnipresent sort of reality, whatever. And I that evening, I just... With the true intention, I handed over my thinking, and there was in a prayer position, and there was a point where, as I let go, there was a slight sense of sadness, a slight sense of disappointment that I had with myself, having to give the Creator my thinking back because it felt like I'd done nothing with it. I felt very sad. I felt, I'm sorry, but take the thinking back because of me, I've not done much good with this, you know? And I felt I disappointed God. In fact, that was one of the big things in my drinking was I'd really disappointed God, you know? And so at that point, the mind began to open. It was at a point where I'd let go of the tension of identification. Now, I didn't know this at the time, but what I did was I just totally did not identify anymore with the mind because I knew the mind was not real. Sheila Jervis had told me that, you see, and I totally believe that. It's as simple as that. And at that point of knowing it's not real, it was still the scariest thing to let go of, right? So letting go of that, I felt where I disidentified with it, where I let go of the attachment to it as a reality principle, it started just to open because the mind, when you're attached to it, becomes contracted. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like an energy and a tight contraction. And of course, where I was no longer attached to it, just began to open up. And as it opened up, it went beyond the coordinate that I'd set on it. Mm-hmm. You see, which is the egoic mark, isn't it? The control you have on the mind is, you know, the contraction, the idea you have. And so as it went, started to open, it went beyond the idea of who I thought I was in the mental construct. And so it started to go beyond the mental construct of who I thought I was. And there was a fear. There was a fear of, you know, oh, don't know what's going to happen here. But I was so broken, absolutely broken that I just stayed with it. I just thought, okay, well, let's just do it, you know. Yeah. And it dissipated, and it was like I describe it as birds flying out of a tree, a flock of birds suddenly, bush, you know, when you shoot a gun, you know, and all the birds, choosh, and it felt like my thoughts just dissipated. All the thoughts in my mind just flew away like a flock of birds. Hmm. And just at that point, there was this opening, just the mind opened up, the thoughts went, and suddenly the mind just became this blank screen. Mm. And there was this perfect observation of blank screen. And I remember for the first time in my life coming to know peace of mind. I'd never known peace of mind before. I'd heard people say it, and I may have even at times thought I'd felt it or sensed it, should I say, not felt it, sensed it. But there was peace of mind, and it was like, you know, when they say the mind is the sky and the thoughts are clouds. It really is. That's exactly how it was. Suddenly there was this infinite sky of mind, which became, it's like a projection screen, but what is observing that is this pure awareness, this pure consciousness. And at that point I realized, I'm not mad, you know, I'm not dead, I've not disappeared. I am observing this. And I'm observing from this, I couldn't have said this at the time, but now, from this undifferentiated awareness and the mind there, and suddenly the mind became the perfect reflection of what was observing, which was nothing, emptiness, you see. This happened. And I was I didn't have time. There was no thinking. Okay. So at that point, I remember suddenly being pulled into a deeper idea. Okay, a deeper idea, which was an emotional idea, you see, because we have layers of thought, you see. We have the thought that is very abstract, we have the thought that is emotional, and we have the thought that is very physical, the body, you see. Now, I didn't know this then, but this is what happened. So suddenly there was a pull to a deeper aspect of contraction within my body. You see, the mind opened up. Suddenly there was nothing keeping me from entering into what I call the heart area. Yeah. And then suddenly there was a pull, and I felt myself as formless consciousness coming down into this area, into my heart area. And as I was going down, I wasn't expecting that, but I just stayed with the formless consciousness. There was no there was no egoic I anymore, no mental construct of doership anymore. So there was just I'm going into my heart, you know. And suddenly, as I'm going into the heart is now, where there's no contraction set on the heart, the ego setting the contraction, keeping it in its emotionally contracted identity of Steve on an emotional level, suddenly that starts to imitate pure consciousness. And so suddenly the heart begins to open because I'm not doing anything with it. And as it begins to open, there's a pain. There was a pain, but it was a clean pain, a pain where there was no suffering. It was because suffering is in the mind, you see. It's the mental attachment you have with things. Suddenly, as the heart was opening, I felt this pain, and as I felt this pain, it was like the pain of the world. I know I'm putting it on a biblical scale now. It was the pain of the world, you know, and yeah, and there's this pain, and this kind of voice not came from nowhere. It was like a voice from within this just said, "You've been running away from this all your life," and I understood then. I understood. I've been running away from my heart opening, you know. I'd been remained in what I knew all my life, you see. Suddenly I'm going beyond what I knew, you see. I've done that now mentally, but now with the mind, but now on this level, the emotional level, this was on a much deeper level. The attachment, the emotional attachment we have for things is much deeper and is much stronger, you see. And so as it began to open, he said, "This is what you've been running away from all your life." And then it opened up, and all there was a void. There was going beyond the emotional contraction of my identity. There was just this absolute void. It was absolutely black. And I'm, you know, I don't want to appear too dramatic, or I don't want to frighten anyone. But for me, I then was facing this very dark void, and this void was pulling me in. And as I was being pulled into this vortex, this void, there was another voice came in. It said, "You'll either go mad or you'll die." and I consented. I said, "Okay." I consented. Okay, not verbally, but in my innermost,
intentionally,
I said, "Okay." And I was pulled into this vortex, this very dark vortex, and as I got pulled in, it just felt like the whole thing opened up. And as I got pulled in, there was a point where I truly did not exist for no time. It was like a boom, boom, you know. It was, I got pulled in. As soon as I got pulled in, I could then see from, if you understand. Mm-hmm. It was I could see from, and at that point there was a point of absolute death, complete death of attachments. There was no attachment anymore to the mental structure, the emotional structure, so much so that everything had opened up, and it truly reflected what was directly observing, and coming and the void was in fact the reflection of the absolute. I got sucked into it, and then I came to, I could see, basically. I could see, and I could see from a completely, completely different reality base to what I was before, totally.
Well, that's really cool. I didn't want to interrupt you because it all.
So what I'd like to do now is just read the next quote in the seven steps, quote 608. It says, the person is but a shell imprisoning you. Break the shell. And if you listen to that, you kind of heard his description of the shell breaking, right? The person is but a shell imprisoning you. Break the shell. And it's kind of funny that it says break the shell because, of course, the way he described it, it's more like he allowed the shell to break. He didn't try and stop the shell from breaking. The breaking was happening more on its own. You know, just like a birth happens on its own, right? But he didn't do anything to get in the way of it. And what I think is really important about what he describes is he keeps talking about, you know, I was the watcher, you know, and when he talks about, I call it the first awakening, it sounds to me like he went through both awakenings in one big movement. He went through the first awakening, which was the end of the egoic mind. And that's when he said that the mind became like a blank projection screen. But he said, you know, I had not gone mad. I was not dead. I hadn't disappeared. I was observing this, right? So he became aware of himself as the watcher. But then right away, the second awakening began. And he calls that the awakening of the heart area. And when that awakening completed itself, I love the way he describes it. He goes, then I could see from. He doesn't even say from what, because there's nothing to say from what, right? He just says, then I could see from. But he says it was a completely different reality base, you know, but then I could see from. So although I would say he became aware of a deeper or a truer watcher in that second awakening that happened. Let's go back to the last sentence of 606. Listen to what this sentence says again. In reality, there is no person, only the watcher identifying himself with the I and the mind. What this quote is telling us is even right now, even while the egoic activity, I'm going to call it an activity, the egoic activity is still in process, there's still a watcher. The watcher is still our reality. It's just that right now the watcher is identified with the egoic activity. The watcher says, I am that. It doesn't say I am that egoic activity, but I am that thinking. I am that person. I am that feeling. I am that, right? It's all me and mine. So obviously one of the things that we always kind of talk about and focus on here, and this hasn't changed. This is just another opportunity to look at it by listening to Steve Ford's description. It's just another opportunity for us to see that what we want to focus on as me is the watcher. Right? The watcher. I'm aware of these thoughts. I'm aware of these feelings. I'm aware of this drama. I'm aware of this story. I'm aware of this fear. But no matter what's going on, keep focusing on the fact that I'm aware of, I'm the watcher. Does anybody have anything they would like to share about all of that that we just listened to from Steve Ford? All right, it's looking pretty quiet. So let me see what else I have here that I collected. I knew that would take a significant amount of time. So then I think I slowed down on the collecting. Let's look at quote 614. says, it is not you who desires, fears, and suffers. It is the person, built on the foundation of your body by circumstances and influences. You are not that person. So as I read this, what I really contemplated is, first there is the mind, not the individual mind, but the mind, consciousness. Then that mind, consciousness, creates the world and body. And then the person is made third. So like there's consciousness that creates the world and body. You're born into a body. You're raised by a particular family in a particular culture with particular experiences. And the person emerges out of all of that, which really means the person is three steps away from reality. Let me repeat that. First, there is the birth of the mind or consciousness, the creator, the creative principle. Then comes the world and the body. You're born as a little body in a world. And then because of the family you're raised by, the culture you're raised in, the experiences you have, these, what would quote 606 say? Because of all of that, these feelings, thoughts, and actions race before you and leave little traces in the mind, which make you think it's a continuity, and the person is born out of that. So the person is three steps away from reality. It is not you who desires, fears, and suffers. It is the person built on the foundation of your body by circumstances and influences. You are not that person. So does anybody have anything they want to add to the contemplation of 614? All right, then let's go look at 619. The ego, like a crooked mirror, narrows down and distorts. It is the worst of all tyrants. It dominates you absolutely. The ego, like a crooked mirror, narrows down. When I read narrows down, what I think about again is, of course, the ego is this person, this personal perspective. And it narrows everything down to about me. Like, from the ego's point of view, are you really listening to me, or are you sitting there at your computer doing something else, not paying attention to me? Right? It's about me. So that's how it narrows down. It takes the entire universe and even everything that's beyond the universe, the absolute, and it narrows it all down to right here. It's about me. That's something to think about. I mean, it always amazes me whenever I stop and contemplate the self-centered nature of the ego. How everything I encounter is about me. How everyone else acts is about me. I mean, I'm kind of left without words after that. It's just, at some point, you have to see that as ridiculous. And not only that, I guess there's like 7.5 billion of us now. That means there's 7.5 billion of us that think this whole thing is about me. And then not only does it narrow it down, it distorts it. I hope I don't break my glasses playing around like that. It distorts it. So not only is it about me, but now I'm completely distorted. Like you happen to walk by real fast one day. Let's say we work together. You walk by real fast one day and you don't say anything as you pass me in the hall at work. It's about me. And now I start making up a story in my mind about how you don't like me anymore because of this thing that happened the other day. And now you're ignoring me and you're probably telling everybody else about me. Never occurs to me that maybe you're just late for a meeting. Or maybe you have diarrhea and you got to get to the bathroom really fast. I mean, you know, there's an endless number of reasons why you may have ran past me in the hallway, right? An endless number of reasons. So it's about me, and I have all these crazy, distorted, ridiculous stories that I'm believing. It's actually a little sick, if you think about it, if you really think about it. It's a little sick. And when you also realize that 7.5 billion of us are doing it, you begin to understand where all the conflict comes from. You know, we saw on the news tonight, I may have the number wrong, I think it was 12, I could be wrong about the number, 12 elementary school age children have been shot in St. Louis this summer. Now, of course, these children, I doubt were the target. Maybe sometimes they were. I didn't really pay that much attention to the news story, to be honest. But, you know, my imagination said is they were caught in crossfire. But the fact is the crossfire was happening because of this distorted, narrow point of view. It's sick. And one reason we want to sit and look at this sickness is because the more we look at the sickness, the more we desire to be healed. And so you really want to look at your own sickness, your own sickness. You know, where are you making up stories about your spouse, your children, your neighbors, your other family members? The people you work with, where do you think that they should all be focused on you? And you're making up these incredible stories about them, distorting every little action, every little. And remember, they're doing the same thing. They're just as sick as you are. And pay attention to the sickness until you are sick and tired of the sickness. And maybe that will begin the breaking of your shell. Right? But one thing we don't do, we don't pay attention to the sickness because we just accept that it is all about me. We just accept our position as the center of the universe, right? And we also just accept that all the stories my mind tells me, they're not distortions, they're true. I'm right. I know what Dawn's thinking right now. I can tell by the look on her face. You see? So we have to begin to look at this as a sickness, and we have to begin to look at my sickness and how my sickness is ruining me. I'll tell you what, at the retreat today, if I had thought about this in advance, I would have asked Francine to be prepared, but I doubt she is prepared. But at the retreat today, Francine shared a journaling. Where in that journaling, she listed, when she listens to the ego, all these things that she feels and experiences. It was a long list of about 15 things. You don't happen to have it there with you, do you, Francine? Let's see if she can share it with us, because it's brilliant. It definitely amplifies the sickness. They did a lot of journaling today, so she's probably having trouble finding it.
Yeah.
It was a couple, like it was a not the last journaling of the day.
Right. I think I have it. Go ahead. I can probably hear you.
Sound check. Can you hear us?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. What would I be What am I when I listen to ego thoughts? I feel unlovable, unworthy, guilty, annoyed, closed-minded, trapped, sick, confused, indecisive, needy, afraid, torn, unsure, defensive, controlling. That's it.
That's it. Thank you. Nice list, huh?
We're all insane.
Yeah, we're all insane. And we want to pay attention to that. We don't want to deny it. We want to pay attention to it until we're sick and tired of being sick, right? And I think I had one more quote. We have 3 minutes. Let's see if we can look at it. That was quote 624. Oh, and the first sentence says exactly what Steve Ford said. When the mind is quiet, it reflects reality. That's what he said, right? He said it reflected its creator. When the mind is quiet, it reflects reality. When it is motionless through and through, it dissolves and only reality remains. Listen to this part. This reality is so concrete, so actual, so much more tangible than mind and matter, that compared to it, even diamond is like soft butter. This overwhelming actuality makes the world dreamlike, misty, irrelevant. I think that kind of sums up what Steve Ford was trying to tell us and also what Bernadette Roberts is trying to tell us. So I'm going to read it again. When the mind is quiet, it reflects reality. When it is motionless through and through, it dissolves and only reality remains. This reality is so concrete, so actual, so much more tangible than mind and matter, that compared to it, even diamond, is soft like butter. This overwhelming actuality makes the world dreamlike, misty, irrelevant. So again, what we want to do in order to allow that shell to begin cracking and then bursting wide open, that shell of the person, begin to notice how sick the person really is. Get sick and tired of it. I think it was Nisargadatta who said you have to have had a surfeit of being that person, right? All right, you guys, I'm going to go. See you later. Bye.